The following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is a world you never understand, and you always fear. But you don't understand.
Because I'm a genius.
How come I know so much? What the hell is going on around here? Who the hell are you people?
It's getting weird!
And here we go.
It's the Riffs and Rants podcast with your host, Johnny Teflon.
All I know is this violates every canon of respectable broadcasting.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Establishment. And we'll be right back after the first gem of the day. Welcome once again to another edition of the Riffs and Rants podcast, hosted by yours truly, Johnny Teflon, right here exclusively on BigBoomRadio.com. Yes, welcome one and all. Now, we got a great show for you today. We got kind of a, well, slightly cerebral main topic, and then something a little lighter on the back end. That's a formula we use sometimes. So, I'll tell you what, right off the bat, we started the episode with a song by The Fix called One Thing Leads to Another, and that's from 1982 off of their album Reach the Beach. And the reason I chose that song is simple. The lyrics kind of match up to the opening segment. It's, you know, of course, like all songs, a little bit open to interpretation. But, you know, when I hear this song, what rings out to me are the bits and pieces, the building blocks of a successful lie or deception. And as you figure them out and you start to put all the pieces together, thus kind of one thing leads to another, you start to see the intricate weavings of this deception. But like all great deceptions, once you figured it out, it's perilous.
I'm no dummy.
Sometimes with disastrous results. So leading us straight into the main topic for tonight. Yeah, it's about the debate and watching it all fall apart.
Where's the real pretty shit now, man?
Now, like most Americans, I was looking forward to this debate somewhat just for the basic entertainment value of it. But there were two questions floating around in the stratosphere that we kind of had a feeling, hopefully, we're going to get answered.
Thanks, Captain Obvious.
So one was our current President Joe Biden's mental fitness for the job, to see how he performs under pressure, without his handlers, without the teleprompters. And the other half of society wanted to kind of see, would Trump hold up without turning into a raving lunatic and getting overly bombastic in all the worst kind of ways? Well, I tell you what, folks, we got half of that in spades because sadly, and I do mean sadly, we'll touch on that later, it was an unmitigated shit show. It was an embarrassing thing to see, and knowing that the rest of the world was watching, and this is what the most powerful country in the world still is propping up to lead us to be that figurehead, that beacon of hope amongst the other democracies on the planet, and a beacon of hope to all people. Yeah, so we're going to get an F on that one. If you're grading it, if you're playing at home, we got an F on that one. Now, right off the bat, I don't blame Biden or his staff for this deception. You know, fish are going to swim and dogs are going to eat their own poop, and politicians are always going to portray themselves as being at the top of their game. That's what it is, folks. It's a stage play. Sometimes it's a morality play, but basically, it's Shakespeare in the park. These guys are getting up there. They're selling you a bill of goods. Doesn't matter if it's from the left or the right. You know, all the decent people that go to Washington either get turned into shitbags or they get squashed and forgotten, okay? So don't be naive to say, oh, well, you know, God's on our side. That old trope. Now, he's sitting this one out, okay? So anyway, we saw all the worst aspects of everything we feared going on with Joe Biden. Now, while I'll give him and his staff a pass, who I don't give a pass, the darlings in mass media who've been busy painting Trump as the Antichrist, all of these deceitful bastards knew full well that this president was dead and just hadn't fallen down yet. How many falls, incoherent sentences, meandering stories, and obvious episodes of declining cognitive skills does it take to drive that point home? Apparently too many, because there were those of us, sadly, myself included, that chalked it up to the subjectiveness of circumstance, you know? Look, it's not easy when reporters are always chasing you, shouting out questions, you know, some of which you simply can't answer, and then others which you just don't want to answer, because it's always bigger than a sound bite.
Drink beer at a party, brilliant!
Anybody could fall going upstairs. Anybody, any one of us, okay? Or trip on stage. Any one of us could tell a story in front of an audience that we think is going to, you know, hey, please ask any comedian, tell a story or a joke that you think is going to just leave them in the aisles laughing and it bombs. Or it's portrayed as stupid or old-timey or whatever, okay? All these things are part of the human condition. What isn't, and what we can't have, like afford to have in a situation like this, is somebody who just freezes up as they're trying to find their thoughts. who mislabels important events and legislation, and the list goes on and on and on. I mean, watching Biden freeze up at the now infamous 12-minute mark, it made me sad. I don't care for the man, his policies, or his snide attitude that he's always have, that stupid fucking grin that he makes when someone else is trying to make a valid point, you know? And I remember all the lies over the years from his other runs for president. I remember, heck, even in the last election when he had a confrontation with, I think it was an auto worker, that came out and just, you know, accused him of, like, what are you doing with the electric cars and this and that, or perhaps it was working conditions. And Biden's response is, well, it's a good thing I don't work for you then, huh? Well, excuse me, jackass. As president, you do work for the people. I know that I'm being super idealistic with this, but that's how it is. And this is how he's always been. So I'm not a fan. However, like most of the American populace, I tend to view whomever the president is as a grandfatherly figure. And sadness comes before embarrassment. And I was sad looking at this because, you know, it goes back to your mama jokes, you know, and everybody can make fun of their own mom or dad, you know, and it's all fun, especially when it's among siblings. But when somebody else does it,
say what?
You got to beat their ass because that's your mother, that's your father, sister, wife, brother, whatever it may happen, you know, or even best friends. Friends that do things that you can't stand, right? But if somebody else tees off on you, you're like, oh, you're done. It's like that with our president. It's just inherently how it is. You know, because everybody fails if the president fails. They always forget that. They want to root against this guy or hope this happens or hope this scandal rears its ugly head, which throws everything into just utter chaos, and then nothing gets done in Washington. And who suffers? Us, the citizens. So you can't root against your president. You know, fittingly, the hallmark of this administration, identity politics, or whatever you want to call it this week, will in fact be its undoing, in this election, because there is no fallback plan. Yeah, so let's look at it from this angle. The fallback plan is Kamala Harris. She is grossly unqualified to lead the nation. She has zero, folks, accomplishments during her tenure to speak of. And everything that made her unelectable in the early stages of the 2016 election, it's going to come back to haunt her once more. Or 2020, I'm sorry. Yeah, she can't debate. She doesn't have a strong presence. Her stance as a former district attorney or attorney general rather of California, sketchy, you know, and the agenda and the mindset, very sketchy. And she brings nothing to the table. She's an empty suit, and that ridiculous, stupid, nervous laugh. She's out of her depth. We all know it. But they married into this when they said, because of identity politics, my running mate's going to be a black woman. Who does that? And after the Dianne Feinstein debacle, let's call it that, you know, what do they say? We're going to put a woman of color in her seat. Why? Because there's nobody else that's qualified? And nobody speaks out against this? I mean, I would think that it's California with a gigantic Hispanic population that keeps that state running, basically. And you're just going to ignore that entire segment and go straight for the low-hanging fruit and say, woman of color, a.k.a. African-American, everybody else go shit in your hat. But it's that kind of mindset in this administration of identity politics that has now come back to royally bite them in the ass. And I say, good. Reap what you sow. Last punchline on that note is she's the only one that can lawfully now inherit the Democrats' $100 million campaign war chest. So, yeah, somebody needs to tell the fat lady she's on in five. And an interview with George Stephanopoulos, Biden went as far as to say, you know, the only person that could ask me to step down or step out of the race is the good Lord above. And I haven't heard from him. To which they say, well, the surest way to hear God laugh is to announce your intentions. But moreover, Stephanopoulos, little weasel that he is, just, again, they've learned nothing from the debate, goes right along with this narrative. Well, I certainly don't hear the good Lord calling for you to step out, so, you know, more power to you. You mindless, sycophantic drone. You know, Nero fiddled while Rome burnt. Guess what, folks? Right now, they're putting Charlie Daniels to shame with the fiddling and the tone-deaf attitude to the shit show that they're in. And look, believe me, I'm not taking this from my steady dose of Fox News, okay? Because it's being reported on CNN as well. They're screwed. They screwed themselves. So I think at this point, the mindset has to simply be, this election's done.
And that's that.
And there was nothing that we could do about it.
Yeah, I'll chalk it up. We're not going to get a mulligan. Whatever. And, you know, try and do everything they can to make Gavin Newsom the new Republican nemesis. And if Trump doesn't responsibly choose his running mate, and let's say he has, like, middle-of-the-road, like, 50% approval rating upon leaving office, the Democrats are going to take it. They're going to snatch this one up with minimal effort. Call me Nostradamus, but that's what I see happening. Now, if Trump is smart and, say, would pick a Marco Rubio, who I'm a fan of, or, I'd love to pick even more, Tulsi Gabbard. Yes, take one of their own. Smart lady, sincere lady, and she's got no love for the Democrats, basically telling her, well, we prefer if you just disappear because you know, you're saying too many smart, responsible things. It'll be interesting to see who he picks because I think that will dictate. It'll put a nail in this coffin of an election, but it'll certainly kind of set the stage for what happens 4.5 years from now, which, hey, it's right around the corner in the life cycle of today's politics. So there's that. Have at it. Discuss amongst yourselves at the water cooler. There you go. All right. It's time for the first gem of the show. I was like a, you know, middle of the road fan of Neil Young. Only because I didn't like it's just the politics and the constant whining. And it's just, you know me. Anybody who listens to the show, you know me. I hate protests of any kind. And I don't want to hear my music. I really don't. However, that cannot take away from the skill of Neil Young and all these things. Again, I'll say it, they're all subjective. So, yeah, his success speaks for itself. But last year, one of the artists I do enjoy listening to, name of Beck, did a cover of Neil Young's tune Old Man. And it's, in my opinion, one of the best covers of a rock and roll song of all time. So I'm going to play that for you. And then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about some more things and stuff. So stay tuned.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
See, I told you folks that was good. I hope you enjoyed it. Yeah, it's definitely a cover for the ages. Beck came out with that last year, released as a single, not part of another album. And yeah, just damn good. And damn good song. And again, in fairness to Neil Young, might not be my cup of tea, but you know what? Man's got talent, great songwriter. And that's what's up with that. So, shifting gears now for something that I alluded to that was a little lighter than the lead topic. Well, I guess it all depends which end of the bite you're on. Subtopic this week, every week is Shark Week at our nation's beaches as of late. And look, in the spirit of Michael Sean Lee, I got some facts. That's right, I did a little research, but they belie the tale. So let's get them out of the way. In 2023, there were 69 shark attacks around the globe and 11 fatalities. And that's up from an average of 63 attacks in prior years and 5 deaths in 2022. So, I mean, the average attacks per year, they're kind of, you know, they're upticked, but pretty close to what they normally are. But the deaths have gone up. And it's got people alarmed, me being one of them. You know, growing up at the Jersey Shore, yeah, sorry, it's one of those irrational fears I have. The U.S. and Australia, no big surprise, are the most shark-infested countries in the world. Since the year 1580, a total of 682 shark attacks have killed more than 155 people in Australia, whereas in the United States, 1,563 attacks have already caused over 35 deaths. So, it's a thing. So, why is this happening? And to put it in perspective, look, it's not cancer, it's not heart disease, it's not drunken driving. You know, the odds of people going to the beach and getting attacked by a shark is literally 1 in 11.5 million. And a person's chance of getting killed by a shark is less than 1 in 264 point million.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah! You know, and of course, there are certain situations where the risk of a shark attack is higher. And in reading up on those, they're saying, If you should see birds circling a particular area, that's a no-no. However, if you've ever seen any incarnation or read the book Moby Dick, it's also a sign that there might be a whale there. Speaking of whales, if they say if you see a dead whale, I guess the carcass floating around in the water, and you're close enough to that, don't be there because the sharks are gonna come and start nibbling away at that whale. I don't know. I don't think I would swim up to a dead whale. That's just me, you know. Even with a GoPro, yeah, I'm not that adventurous. And you know, also you see on these shows during the aforementioned Shark Week, wherever there's seals playfully splashing around and learning how to swim, there's probably going to be some breaching great whites in that area too. So you want to steer clear of that, okay? look, 11.5 million, those are great odds, okay? But then why is it, and you can't attribute the whole thing to the movie Jaws, but why is it people are still so terrified of sharks and the concept of a shark attacking them? Because I'll tell you why. If you're the one in the 11.5 million, all you cared about is the one, is you, yourself, at that moment, that holy shit moment, something's biting my leg. You don't care about some think tank, okay, with guys in their tweed jackets and bifocals saying, well, we estimate the chances are one in, okay, wait, let me circle back as far as the fatality ratio, yeah. You're not worried about being the one in the 264.1 million. You're just worried about the one, okay? So, what's causing this? That's the big question here. It could be the growing white shark population and the rise in public use of beaches for recreation have heightened safety concerns, okay? It could be the changing ecosystem in so much as overfishing in certain areas in the globe. It's bringing these sharks closer to shore. And, you know, like any animal, even a migrating predatory species, they talk. They talk and word gets out, okay? So if one guy just happens to be scooting by, you know, the Cape one weekend and sees it's a veritable smorgasbord out there, he's probably going to touch base with another shark and like, hey, you know, over here.
Oh, wait, fat person.
You know, more people in the water just invites everything that sharks love. The noise, the vibrations, the trace amounts of metal in the water. Potentially blood from like little cuts and whatnot.
If you open the beaches on the 4th of July, it's like ringing the dinner bell, for Christ's sake.
Everything is ringing the dinner bell, like they said in Jaws. It's so freaking true. And we are just caught up in the fact of sharks being such majestic creatures, okay? Especially the great whites. Let's see if I can get this name right without butchering it. Carcharodon carcharias.
Benefits of a classical education.
You know, that leads all of the sharks in attacks on people and boats, as well as fatalities. Currently, the great white shark has been connected with a total of 354 total unprovoked shark attacks, including 57 fatalities. That's drawn from those numbers I mentioned previously. So yeah, they're still the boogeyman for good reason, okay? Now, for my money, again, growing up on the Jersey Shore, we would see like the occasional Makos, which to me were the scariest looking sharks, not just because they're the fastest, but to look at this thing, it's like a torpedo with razor sharp teeth on the end. There is nothing cute, cuddly, or majestic about it, you know? It's literally just a track star of the ocean with teeth. That's the beginning and the ending of the story right there. Yeah, there's a certain majesty that comes with looking at these great whites, and I'm like the next guy. I'll sit there and watch the Shark Week when they breach out of the water and get that full extension, and that's just amazing. But I also look at that with the solace of knowing that, generally speaking, they're someplace down by Australia or maybe around the tip of South Africa. You don't really get that close to the East Coast of the United States. I mean, it happens. Yeah, and your next likely area would be off the coast of Massachusetts and Rhode Island, where the great whites that they've already tagged and given names to, they're spotted, you know, all through the year, scooting around those waters, doing their thing, you know. And again, those are heavily, heavily fished areas. So maybe it's we're taking too much of the food supply, and they're looking for something else. Look, if you go to McDonald's and they're out of McNuggets, you'll get a Big Mac. That's the way of things. So we're now, apparently, the Big Mac for the Carcharodon Carcharias. There we go.
I can handle things, I'm smart!
Yeah, sharks. So that's up with that. Now, another story along with this that's come to my attention over the last couple days. And it's sad, but it's one of those stories you got to look at it and be like, WTF. In Australia, I think it was a 13-year-old girl had just wandered off and went to go swim in a creek and was eaten by a crocodile. Tragic. You know, my heart goes out to the family. Poor little girl got eaten by a crocodile. And then, like many instances where it's like an unnecessary death of a child for whatever reason, you look at this, and I come to find out that this particular area of Australia that they lived in is renowned as a hotbed of crocodile activity. In particular, giant 12-foot-long friggin' crocodiles, okay? In this little town of, I think it was 400 people that lived there. Ganmerianga, about a 7-hour drive south of Darwin. Now, I get it. It's Australia. It's British Texas. Everything's kind of like laid back. And when you live in a country where that's got more poisonous species per square foot than any place else on the planet, I get it. It's, you know, you learn to adapt. And I guess maybe your guard gets let down because you can't be on red alert 24/7. And the locals probably know how to circumvent confrontational situations with any myriad of poisonous and or man-eating critters that are running around out there. However,
I'm the guy that keeps Mr. Dead in his pocket. And I say we're going to stay here. And we're going to live a long time. And we're going to be thankful.
Here's an example. If you fly out of Miami on a clear day, it's very scenic, very beautiful. And I guess because of the patterns of how the traffic is coming in and coming out, you kind of take off and spiral up in a couple circles before you jet off. You know, most airports, you'll take off, you do like a hard bend, and then kind of zip up to your altitude and plateau. Miami's different. You kind of got to circle up through the air and then, you know, get your pattern set and take off. So as you're scooting along and you're seeing all the buildings and the people get littler and littler, you're able to see everybody's backyard. And that whole immediate vicinity of Miami is beautiful. You can see the little houses and their little square yards. And you can also see all these little irrigation canals running behind everybody's property or through the senior villages or whatever, what have you. And yes, you can see the alligators in the water. It's that easy, folks. Anybody that's been to Florida knows. They're all over the place, okay? And now they got to contend with formerly not indigenous reptiles like boa constrictors and things. But now that lives there, too. So, yeah, have at it. Chamber of Horrors that Florida is. If the Florida man doesn't get you, the Florida reptiles surely will. But my point is, you can see alligators all over the place, okay? So I'm certain that in this little town, if you know where you live, there's a shit ton of giant crocodiles. What parent in the right mind is going to let the kid out of their sight for fear that they might go for a little dip on a hot day? And I'm sure it's scorching hot there. Don't get me wrong. And again, you can't live in a bubble. But get yourself an inflatable pool and keep an eye on your kid. Because damn, this is like the modern version of the dingoes coming out of the bush and dragging babies away.
Dingo and the baby, 97.1, Quahog.
Oh, baby.
There's no excuse for this. This could have been prevented. You know, it harkens back to that episode in Disney World a few years ago. I think it was out by the International Resort, or is that the name of it? Grand Floridian. And these people went to go swim in a lagoon or something, and the signs are right there, posted all over the place. Do not swim. No swimming allowed. And they were from another country, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Australia.
The sea was angry that day, my friends.
So the family jumps in for a little dip, and next thing you know, right. Here comes the alligator, snatched one of their kids, killed the kid.
Would you please pass the jelly?
No excuse for it. So, what is this? Is this be afraid of every place I step on this planet, Johnny, because you got hang-ups? No! Is it, are you trying to say we're all shitty parents and you know better than we do? No! Not saying that either. But what I'm saying is, an ounce of prevention's worth a pound of cure? Save your kids? I don't know. Just be mindful of your surroundings. Seriously. I went to go see a shuttle launch many years ago. And as I rented a spot on the other side of Kennedy Space Center, because it was post 9/11, security was through the roof. So the best you could do, the closest you could get, were to be, purchase a parking spot on some of the restaurants on the other side of the water from the Space Center. It was, you could still see the shuttle on the pad, so it wasn't that bad. And you got to see it take off and the ground shake and the sonic boom that lasts forever and then the red, white, and blue colored vapor trails. It was amazing. But my first takeaway as I was sitting there was, how come no one's sitting near me? I had this nice green area. The water's right in front of me. And then I look off to my right, and it's a giant, drainage pipe of some kind. And, Mama Teflon didn't raise no fool. I know that chances are something's going to come running out of there and get me. A gator. So I backed up a ways, discretion being the better part of valor, right? Backed up, sat along with everybody else, general population. Theory being, I don't have to be the fastest one in the crowd if this thing comes out of the tube. I just have to be the second slowest.
They tell me you're a man with true grit.
That's what's up with that. So, yeah, be careful, mind your surroundings. Enjoy summer, but just don't wind up as a lunchable to some kind of critter. That's all I'm saying. All right, folks, let's dipsy-do right into the third gem. And this one has a summer theme because, yes, believe me when I tell you, I'm happy it's summer. And I got to get some sunshine at some point myself. Maybe dip my toes in the water. You never know. But what is better to serve that than a quality ska tune? And I'm going to play one for you by a little band called the Aquabats. And this song is called Hot Summer Nights. Won't last forever. I'll play this for you and I'll be back in a couple more minutes with some more things and a wrap-up. Stay tuned.
Go and get and tell me why. You said something about you.
thing is, I guess she's joining you on the expedition. Wow, that's totally cool.
I hope you're doing well. Anyway, I was at the mall and I met your identical cousin Beth. I didn't even know they had identical cousins, and it made me miss you even more.
Yep. Good tune. Good band, the Aquabats. If you've never seen them, and I think they even had a children's show for a while, dressed up like old-timey superheroes, like from the turn of the century, and they have adventures and everything, but good ska band. So again, the name of that song was Hot Summer Nights, subtitled Won't Last Forever, and that was from 2005 off of their album Charge, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So, moving right along, we got some news going on about the station and things and stuff. Steve Winwood joins the Classic Rock Showcase in a week or two. That was an epiphany to me, because I knew of Steve Winwood. And basically what I knew of Steve Winwood was he was a teenage prodigy when he joined the Spencer Davis Group. I know he had hits with them. And then it was my understanding that he had joined the band Traffic briefly. Then I knew after that there was like another project that he did. And then I knew he kind of reappeared in the 80s with some kind of soft rock, soulful tunes. Had a lot of success, you know. So, diving a little bit deeper, I learned, not much more about his stint with the Spencer Davis Group. Great old-time soul rock band. Clearly his biggest hits with that would be Gimme Some Lovin' and their version of I'm a Man. But, after that, he joined Traffic. He had success with them. And then this little side project, which I couldn't believe that I'd even forgotten, really. A little thing he did with Eric Clapton, yes, and Ginger Baker, called Blind Faith, and they also released the singular, seminal single, the acoustic Can't Find My Way Home, which was a very good song as well. The guy's got a pedigree, so clearly, he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, deservedly so. And then I started listening to those songs that I mentioned and he came out with in the 80s. And they're really quite good. I mean, Roll With It, good tune. Higher Love, good tune. So it was an easy thing to do once I got the ball rolling. And the reason I bring it up is that, I think at this point that I know a lot about music, which I guess to the layman I do, but there's always so much more. I mean, I might know a lot about the particular genre of classic rock, but there's so many other genres, everything from R&B to hip-hop to the giant cavernous category of pop. Oldies, rockabilly, punk, ska, new wave. There's so much out there, and I don't know. At the risk of sounding corny, I always say the songs we grow up with are friends that were with us our entire lives that never age and always take us back to, hopefully, a better place in time when we need them the most. There's so much out there for people in terms of music, just like literature. There's authors we love, there's books we'll read over and over and over again because of the way it makes us feel. And maybe in today's society when everything is just so damn cutthroat and reactionary and living in the immediate moment with such aplomb that everything, like a child, is either super good or super bad, and everything else in between just leaves us like, soulless. We need music now more than ever. We really, really do. I don't know. That's my public service announcement, feel good statement, but I mean it. Really, we need music now more than ever. On another note, don't mean to put the cart before the horse, but for this podcast, the future of this podcast, I'm continuing to look for now a somewhat steady co-host. It's a lot to carry the load alone. I know you guys don't want to listen to my voice for an hour. That's for damn sure. I enjoyed the shows that I did with Andy B and John James. It's not really our collective cup of tea, you know, so we're continuing to look. They're my friends. They're awesome. They'll always be awesome. But I guess I'm kind of still chasing the windmill, so to speak. That person that's like Michael Sean Lee, even though I know full well he can never be duplicated, but I want to capture some of that je ne sais quoi that him and I had, that you all remember, the back and forth, the fun, the respect, and the introspection that you'll get when you get two people, mostly sober, talking about news of the day that you don't get from the news of the day. Savvy? Yeah, you all know what I'm talking about. So anyway, looking for that, I got a couple of prospects, so I'm feeling very, very good about it.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
As well as getting some more help with the radio station, because I don't want to give it up, but my schedule is getting just pretty tight.
Well, I think I'm doing okay for a 15-year-old with a wife and a baby.
And what I like to call the real world. So something's got to give. Got to call in some reinforcements. Can't do it all myself. These are the lessons I'm learning in my 50s. That's right. 50s. So, as always, I want to thank you all for joining me on this somewhat short but fun episode. And just take care of each other. Enjoy your summer. Watch out for sharks. And I'll see you on the flip side.
I'm pleased and happy to repeat the news that we have, in fact, caught and killed a large predator that supposedly injured some bathers. But as you see, it's a beautiful day, the beaches are open, and the people are having a wonderful time. Amity, as you know, means friendship.